Okay, we're going to start on the top of Kuf Lamed Aleph. Lamed Aleph, on the second line, Rava has a question. By Rava, Bevari Peach. What's the status when it comes to gifting from a healthy and well person? Ki kama Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha, the position of Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha that you can be morish to whomever you choose is only true b'shechid meira. It's only true of someone who's on their deathbed. And they're granting their last will and testament. Why? The bar oroitehu, because he's a morish. He's a person that is clearly going to pass down his possessions. And the pasuk says, "Vayah biyom min chilo et benav acharav," on the day that he's going to pass his possessions, that's when he gets to choose. So this is it. This is the time. When else would it be? He's sitting on his deathbed. He's giving his last will and testament. That's when he can divide up his property. Aval bevarilo. That would not be true of a perfectly healthy person. He would not be able to distribute his possessions through Yerusha at will. Of course, Matana is different, but here we're talking according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha, where you have the right through Yerusha to pass it to whichever child that you choose. Oh, Dilma afilu bevarinami. So maybe, or maybe even Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha's position applies, even by a healthy individual. I mean, that we would, Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha doesn't mean literally biyom hinchilo, the day that he distributes his property. I mean, the day when he's on his deathbed, but whatever day he chooses to distribute his property, he can distribute it as he chooses. So I'm relating Rabbi Sharshi of the Rava. So Rava queried, and Rabbi Sharshi now is responding, Tashma. I can bring a proof. The Amalo Rabbi Natan the Rabbi. Rabbi Natan, this is Rabbi Natan Abavli. We mentioned him in Pitom HaKtoret in the morning. Rabbi Natan Abavli said to Rabbi from the Masada Mishnah who lived in Eretz Yisrael, Shanitem Mishnatchem ki Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha. You made your Mishnah. The way you worded the Mishnah, it shows that you favor or that you believe that Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha, right, is correct. It's not. We have a Mishnah in Tzubot. Lo kotav la benin dichrin dehaven laich minai inun yartun kesev ketuvach yotera chukehon deimavion. So if a person leaves out what is known as what's called ketuvat benin dichrin. Ketuvat benin dichrin was a addition or institution that was established by the Chachamim in order to protect the dowry of the woman. And to ensure that whatever came in her dowry, whatever money was contributed by her father, the father of the Kala, was contributed towards the marriage, would end up with her children and not the children of the husband. Why is that important? Well, it's important when you marry multiple women. If you're married to have three wives, and then a father-in-law is looking at the potential that if he grants a dowry to his daughter, that his daughter may predecease her husband. She predeceases her husband inherits her. And then after that, when her husband passes away, he now has children from three different women. That means those children will all divide up the property of the father, the husband, the one who passed away. If that's the case, the property that was granted by the father-in-law, granted by the father of the Kala, now will be distributed amongst children that he has no relationship with, no blood relationship with. So in order to encourage fathers to grant to their daughters large dowries and to feel comfortable about granting large dowries to their daughters, they created what's called a ketubat benin dichrin. Ketubat benin dichrin means that if the woman predeceases her husband, then even though the husband is entitled to inherit her, in Minat Torah, the husband inherits her fully, and he becomes his property. And when he passes away, they'll be distributed to his children, no matter which wife they were from or who they are from. The Chachamim said, no, what we're going to do is that when we come to dividing up the property, each set of children from each wife, I mean the male children from each wife, will get their mother's ketubah. That's how we'll distribute it. So for instance, we have three wives. One wife has a 100 shekel ketubah. Another wife has a 200 shekel ketubah, and the third wife has a 300 shekel ketubah, and then the husband has an estate that's worth 1,000 shekel. So when all his wives predecease him, so now he's inherited everything that came in the ketubah, all the nechsei malug, all the nechsei son of Barzel, everything that was in the ketubah he inherits. So now when he passes away, we will go look at the property, assuming there's enough property to exceed the value of all the ketubah together, then we'll say, the woman who had 100 shekel ktuba, her children will get 100 shekel up front. We'll divide up 100 shekel and give it to them. The woman had a 200 shekel ktuba, her children will get 200 shekels and divide it. And the third woman who had a 300 shekel ktuba will divide it with her children, the 300 shekel. So now you've used up already 600 shekel of the estate without doing any yerusha. The remaining 400 shekel will be divided evenly between all the children, between the three wives' children. So that's what ketubah b'dei nechrim means, that we give a priority to the ketubah of the woman to pass to her children, assuming that there's at least some residual that will be divided up ke yerusha d'oraisa. So based on that, the lashon that's used here, so why is this relevant? Because if he does not write it in the ketubah, it's a tnai ketubah, and if he does not write it in the ketubah, he's still chayav. You're still obligated to execute on the ketubah b'din rechin, because it's tnai beis din hu. It's a condition of beis din. I mean, it's an automatic condition in marriage that beis din imposed upon individuals, even if you leave it out of the ketubah. So even if it's absent from the ketubah, it's still a part of the ketubah, because that is a tnai beis din. Now, why is this relevant? This is relevant because what are we doing here? We are actually going against the Torah's will of Yerusha distribution, and we're reallocating the Yerusha based on this Takanat Chachamim. So now, if you are Rabbi Yochanan ben Barucha, that's no problem, because all you're doing is giving more to certain male children than other male children. That's Ben or Banim, Ben Abanim, and you're allowed to do that. So executing on the Ketubat Ben Dichrin, even though it looks like you're matan mashal kadosh b'Torah, that you are undermining the Yerusha min HaTorah, nevertheless, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Barucha, that's not the case. You're allowed to redistribute amongst rightful heirs the property, and that's what you're doing over here. Now, if you look at the Lashon of the Ketubat Ben Dichrin, it says, how do I know that they're using Rabbi Yochanan ben Barucha? Why? Because it says, inun yar tun. He uses a Lashon of Yerusha. So the grant in the ketubah that indicates that the children will get the ketubah is in a Lashon of Yartun Yerusha. So it has to be functioning now. It means that this all happens at the time that the husband passes away, and he's granting it. The obligation or the commitment that he makes in the ketubah is Yartun, that they will be Yoresh, which means that he's basically redistributing the Yerusha. So that only can be according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Barucha. So that's Rabbi Natan's statement to Rabbi, is that you clearly hold like Rabbi Yochanan ben Barucha, and you set up your Mishnah like Rabbi Yochanan ben Barucha, because you use Lashon Yartun. So Amar lo Rabbi, Rabbi responded to him and says, no, Yisbun Tanan. We really didn't have Yartun in there. It really was Yisbun. Yisbun would mean to gift. Now Matana, no problem. You can gift whenever. Before, when you gift at the time of the Ketubah, no problem. That's way before death. That's way before Yerusha. You're preempting Yerusha by gifting. So that's Yisbun, that we should grant a gift over here. Now, whether Rebbe said this here to be, that's what he really meant. I mean, he really meant that we wanted to write, or we did write Yisbun, or is he just being doche Rebbe Natan Bavli? That's unclear here. I would lean towards saying that this was, he was trying to give him a real answer, that we will, Yisbun is what we'll write. That way it can work even according to the Chachamim, not just according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Barucha. Amar Rabbi, Rabbi says now, Yaldut Haita Bi, I was young, I was youthful and foolish. And my response to Rabbi Natan Bavli was not really appropriate. Why? Because Ella de Kaimelon b'nei derchen lo tafer mishabde. Says the problem is that if you do it derech Yerusha versus if you do it derech, right, matana, there's a significant difference. And that is, a matana, just like a loan, is entitled, or a gift, or any grant to an individual, you're entitled to then go and take that from any property that was sold afterwards. Why? Because you gained the first right to the property. Your gift preceded anybody else's borrowing, loans, sale. You are the first claimant on the estate. And therefore, even if, for instance, afterwards the individual sold all of his property, you could still go get your gift because you were the first recipient. And anybody else coming after you, you have a right before them. You can go get it back from them. You can be claimed from even Mishabdi, from encumbered property. On the other hand, by Yerusha, when does Yerusha happen? Oh, at the end. That means that anything that was sold until that point in time preceded you. And therefore, you will be the last claimant instead of the first claimant. So Rabbi says, we know that by ketubat benin dichron, you cannot mi mitarfei mishabdeh. You cannot take it from encumbered property. And therefore, it must be that it's going gerech yusha and not derech matana.
Although, so that's it. Although, when would the matana happen?
Immediately. Immediately. It's a granted matana right away.
In this case of ketubat benin dichron, would it happen a second before he died?
No, it happens at the point of the marriage. At the ketubah, he writes a gift right then. The gift is written at the point of the marriage, he's granting a gift. That will present the problem. Your chush is, and that's what the Gemara is going to come up, there's a big problem with that. How can you grant it at the time of the marriage? We'll see in a second. All right, so now, based on this, Rabbi was saying, listen, I want to change it to Yizbun, so it'll be Diriakol. But then he backed away and he says, ugh, I couldn't have changed it to Yizbun, we couldn't have written Yizbun. Why? Because that would grant more rights than we want in Ketubat Binyan Echon. I really had to write Yartun. Not because we're holding like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, but the reason we wrote Yartun is to show, then what, that it's not Tarfei Mim Mishabdei. So we had to write Yartun because of that. So, Isa Kadatcho, Sizbun Tanan, had we written Matana, Amai Lo Mitarfei Mishabdei. Why wouldn't you could have taken out even on an encumbered property? Lashma minah, your tun tanan. It must be that the right lashon of Mishnah or the right way to the Mishnah be read is with the word your tun in it. So man shmait le did le haisvaru. So now, who's the one that holds that your tun works in this type of situation where you're redistributing Yerusha? Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Ushma minah. From this we conclude afilu bibari. Because when is the ketubah granted? The ketubah is granted early on in a person's life. The person's not a gusais when he's getting married. Right? The person's not on his deathbed when he's getting married. He grants a ketubah. And here he's making a promise to redistribute the Yerusha in advance, way in advance of his death or being a shchimera. And we see that Rebbe is saying that we use the Lashon Yartun because we don't want him to take from encumbered property. But that means that he's using or he's functioning under the position of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. And that'll be the answer to Rabbi's question, that even Bil Bari, you can go ahead and redistribute the property. So that would be the, if you just stopped here, that would be the conclusion of the Gemara, that way Rabbi has the Mishnah written, it's relying on Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, here in a case where it's a Bari. Amalei Rav Papa l'Abaye, so Rav Papa said to Abaye, Ben l'man d'amar Yizbun, Ben l'man Yartun, whether you write in the Mishnah Yizbun, or whether you write your tune, you have a big problem. What's that? Ha, this is I think David, but you were a little bit focused on. Ha, ein adam makne davar shelo bo le'olam. Person cannot give something or grant something that doesn't exist. Over here, you are granting these individuals something in the future, property that doesn't necessarily exist, or a ketubah that hasn't been collected on yet. You're granting them future rights today. Even according to Rabbi Meir, says you can have a transaction about something that does not exist yet, meaning that the husband's right to inherit the ketubah will depend on his wife passing away. So he doesn't own it yet. He might own it in the future if she predeceases him. This is only to somebody that exists. You can only grant a gift, even if you agree that you can grant future rights, or something that will come into your possession in the future, you have to grant it to somebody who exists today. You can't both grant future rights to someone who will be in the future. A person who doesn't exist. Who doesn't exist here? The Vashinu B'lulam, no. Who doesn't exist here? The children. The children have yet to be born. In the Ksuba, he's granting rights to children that don't exist. So fine, even if you hold the Rabbi Meir who says that, okay, I don't own the ksuba today, but I may own it in the future, so I can sell you that right in the future, or I can grant that right in the future. But I have to grant it to someone who is standing in front of me today. There has to be some form of kinyan today. Over here, the children don't exist. If the children don't exist, you can't pass that right or grant that right to them when they're not around. So, leaving aside the question of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka versus the Chachamim, or Yizbun or Yartun, you have a problem. How does this even function? How do you have a kinyan here? How do you have a valid methodology for passing this type of Yerusha or this gift to individuals who don't exist in the world? Ella, what do you have to say? Tanai Beis Din, shiny. What do you have to say? That it's a Tanai Beis Din, and Tanai Beis Din is different. What does it mean, Tanai Beis Din, shiny? Tanai Beis Din is that, basically, which I would have explained originally, with Tanai, if I had looked at Tanai Ketubah or Ktubat Benin Dechrin, that's a establishment of Beis Din. And we have a general principle by Beis Din, that's Hefker, Beis Din, Hefker. When it comes to Dinei Mamonos, any monetary matters, Beis Din has the ability to reallocate or change ownership of property. That's what they're empowered. They're empowered to do such a thing. That's Hefker, Beis Din, Beis Din. So you have to say that here too. You have to say the way Ktubat Benin Dechrin works is because of Hefker, Beis Din, Hefker. The Beis Din has the ability to grant rights to children who don't exist from property that's not in the necessarily yours today. So we're ignoring all the normal restraints or restrictions or limitations of Kinyonim and saying that Beis Din has a right to do this. So once you've done that, Al-Khanami, Tanai Beis Din Shiny. You can do the same thing here. You can say the same thing here, that Tanai Beis Din is Shiny, that you have the ability to Derech, right, Lashon Yerusha, to pass over a property, even if you don't hold like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, or even if you hold like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, and he doesn't say this by Bari, nevertheless, you could still use it, this methodology, because it's a Tanai Beis Din. It has nothing to do with normal Kinyanim, it has nothing to do with the normal rules of Yerusha. We're not in that Parsha at all. We're in a separate Parsha called Tanai Beis Din, and Tanai Beis Din has its own rules. And those rules are Hefker, Beis Din, Hefker, and they can determine exactly what it is, what that they want, and how they want it to function. So you have no... Now, the question is what the Gemara said at this point in time. Are we saying there is no proof? Now, from this question of Rabbi Natan to Rabbi Natan Bavli towards Rabbi, there is no question because it's all Tanai Beis Din, there's nothing to talk about. Or does Rabbi Natan's question really still exist? Except... But even though his question still exists, it doesn't prove. And it may not prove or may prove something. So that's a difference in the Rishonim at this point, where are we up to in the Gemara? According to Tosafot, he says that even though, based on this question, it would suggest that we could fit the Mishnah even according to Chachamim. That's not indicative that this is only Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Nevertheless, Rabbi Natan's question is still a good question. Why? It says, Makom makom shapir kamalei Rabbi Natan. Rabbi Natan asks a good question. The Rabbi, Shinite mishnatem gru yochan ben broka, de itlei de mahani yartun bishchib meira. Olahochi hocha afilu bebari konu mishum tanai Beis Din. He says that the tanai Beis Din is built on something that would work in another situation. Right. I mean, why write a lashon of yartun unless you believe that in other places yartun would actually function and work? So fine, yartun works by shchib meira. May not work by Bari, we don't know anything about it by Bari. So then the Tanai Beis Din allows you to extend it even to a Bari. So that makes sense. But if you don't hold that Yartun works in any situation, why use a Lashon Yartun? So again, even though it doesn't prove to us anything according to the question of Rava, nevertheless, Rabbi Natan's question is a valid question, which shows us that Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka really authored the Mishnah, and that means that you are establishing the Mishnah in Ketubot like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Now, Rebbe doesn't mind that. You know why? We just saw in yesterday's daf, who does Rebbe paskin like? Rebbe paskins like Rebbe Yochanan ben Broka. It's not a problem. Nevertheless, Rebbe Natan's criticism of Rebbe is, if you can't establish the Mishnah according to Divrei Hakol, why not? Why not use the Lashon Yizbun? You would have been able then to have it include everybody, including the position of the Chachamim. So that's the way Tosos learns, that the question is still a valid, Rebbe Natan's question is still a valid question, although it brings us no proof to what... Rava's question is, what does Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka hold by Bari? That's the way Tosfos learns it. The Rashbam over here suggests, he doesn't explain what the position or what Rabbi Natan's question would be here, but he says now the Mishnah is Divrei Hakol. Over here the Mishnah would be totally Divrei Hakol. Then along comes Abaye, and Rabbi responds to Rav Papa. He says, Shiny. And he says, Amalei Mishum de Kamafik Leib Lashon Yartun. Well, the answer is because you used the Lashon of Yerusha. So now, if you use the Lashon of Yerusha, what does that mean? You could have used other Lashonot, you could have used the Lashon of Yizbun. And the fact that you intentionally used the Lashon of Yartun, that shows me that you really hold like, right, Rabbi, you hold like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. The fact that you actually used the Lashon of Yartun when you had a choice to use Yartun or Yizbun, and the fact that you chose Yartun shows me that you really hold like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Now, according to Tosfot, that's not, you have to say something else, because Tosfot already said that even beforehand when he used the word Yartun, it also means that Rabbi Natan's question is a good question, because the fact that you use Yartun. So now Abaye comes and makes a different step, and he says, the fact that you use Lashon Yatun, and even though because of tonight Beis Din, maybe we still should be able to prove that by Bari we also say this. Why? Because if in general we don't say that a Bari would work by Yartun, then why would you come along and establish something that's a tonight Beis Din using a Lashon that doesn't work in other places? So Bari extends what it's also said by the statement before, which is, all right, this sounds like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, but only by Shechid Meira. Bari says, wait a minute, if you're going to use a Lashon of Yartun, of Yerusha, then why would you use the Mishnah, use a Lashon of Yerusha that works nowhere else, and then come all of a sudden here, put it in here, and say that tonight Beis Din makes it good, not only good in general, but good by Bari, even by a Bari. So Abai says that's too far of a jump, it's too far of a leap. So what you could say is, normally Yartun, Yerusha works by a Bari. This case is unusual because you're trying to do it or gift to people who don't exist in the world. So that's where you need tonight Beis Din to come along and help you out. But in general, it would work by a Bari. So that's Abai's point. Abai's point is that the tonight Beis Din should only help for the minimum amount that it needs to help. So that means use a Lashon that works everywhere else. Just the unique circumstances here don't allow you to use it. And that's why tonight Beis Din comes in to help. As opposed to before, the question, according to Rapapa, would say, all right, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says it by Shechid Meira. The Tanai Beis Din allows you to apply it to Bari, and then allows you to apply it in Bari to a situation which normally wouldn't work. But then it means you're making two extensions from the normal halacha of Shechid Meira Yerusha. We're allowing you to extend it to Bari, and then not only to Bari, but to extend it even in cases where there's no recipient available now. He says that's too far, and Tanai Beis Din wouldn't extend that far. The Tanai Beis Din would just take one step away from what would be the normal halacha. So Abai suggests, based on that, right? According to Tosfos, this is an answer to the question that Bari, it does work by Bari. You know why it works by Bari? Because that's how the Tanai Beis Din extends it even to recipients that don't exist. So that's the way the right Tosfos learns it. According to the Rashbam, it seems already that the question's been answered, that it works by Bari, and now we're simply discussing why they use Lashon Yartun by Ktubat Binin Dechrin. Novir, he's just saying that Abai says the usage of the word Yartun shows you that he holds like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. We're not discussing where, whether it's Shchimira or Bari, it just looks like he uses it. Now,
you can always say that it's not
as far as they want. You could say that. Tosfos is trying to keep the flow of the Gemara alive. We'll see why that he keeps thinking that the Gemara did not end. Then it's continuing. We'll see at the end why. Hadar Abai, Lav Milsihi. Abai then retracted his position. Da'amrei, because we have the Tznan. We have another Mishnah. Lo katav la b'non nuchvan de avin laichiminai yavin yatvan v'beitivi yitzayim yichsai ad detechalkun neguvrin. This is another Tznai l'ktubah. It's called the b'non nuchvan. This is the fact that his daughters, his female children, will have a right to live off the estate until they get married. So they are not entitled, the daughters are not entitled to any Yerusha, Minat Torah, and therefore they are on their own, basically, after the father passes away. But the Chamim placed the Tznai in the Ketubah, and we write into the Ketubah. And again, if you don't write it into the Ketubah, the Gemara says, Chayav, Shu Tznai Beis Din. Tznai Beis Din, it's included whether you write it or not. But this Tznai says that as long as there is a large amount of property, the boys will inherit, like the Torah says, but they will be obligated to provide for their sisters. They'll be obligated to provide for the daughters of the marriage until they get married. Until the daughters are married and supported by their husbands, the estate will support these daughters. So again now, what do we have here? We have a redistribution of Yerusha. Minat Torah, who does Yerusha belong to? The boys, wholly, entirely, with no exceptions, with nothing left out. Over here again, we're saying that there's exceptions that the daughters own like a payroll interest almost. They have some sort of living will in the estate that they have that they are granted until they get married. So how does that work? But look carefully. What is Lashon used over here? Lashon over here, it says, B'nan nuchman da'avin laichem minai, yavin yatvan bebeti, b'itzami nechsai ad techelkun leguvrin. So over here, do you see a Lashon Yerusha? No. This sounds to be like a Lashon of matana. It's a grant to the daughters. Now, why does that make a difference? Well, guess what? Both of these Tanai Beis Din are found where? In the Ketubah. And what did we learn before? We learned before that Ben Betchila, Ben Be'emtza, Ben Besof, if you lose a Lashon Matana, that governs everything found in that gift, in that document. And we said before, even according to Rav Sheshes, by Shtei Sadot and Shtei B'nei Adam, it still works. So over here you have exactly that. You have one gift that is from the father to the benin dechvin. You have another gift that is from the father to the benin nukvan, to the females. One of them is written in Lashon Yusha. One of them is written in Lashon Matanah. So what do we know then? If you have Matanah, anytime you have the Lashon Matanah here, that'll govern everything, and everything is granted as a Matanah. Okay, so they're up to right, right. Very good, good question. So v'aval lezeb matana, lezeb rusha. So now you have a matana in Yerusha. V'chol lezeb rusha, v'chol lezeb matana. Afilu rabbanan modu. So that's the fact that he used the lashon yartun over here proves nothing, because yartun is subjected to the lashon yizbun later on, and therefore it's a matana. So yartun doesn't prove that he holds that Rabbi Yochanan ben Rocha at all. Doesn't show you anything. It just, right? It just shows you that it's going to be subject to what? There's one thing it tells you, and what is that? It tells you one thing, that you do not allow to collect from Meshabde. That may be why it was possibly done that way. It might be to indicate the limitations of the Tanai Beis Din, that you cannot collect from Meshabde. To answer your question, David, why Lashon Lo Yartun is to show you that there's a limitation to it. So now, Amar Lei Rav Nechumi Vita Amar Rav Chananya Bar Menumi Lebaye. Wait a minute. Your underlying assumption here is that it's a Tanai Beis Din, and therefore, if it's a Tanai Beis Din, it's as if it's written in the same document, or it's automatically together, because they must have instituted it at the same time. If they instituted it at the same time, it's what we call Tochdei Dibur. If it's Tochdei Dibur, we said before, and that was what we saw in the Gemara, that if it's Tochdei Dibur, then it's mashpia. Then it influences. One gift will influence the other gift. So only when it's tochdei dibur. How do you have a tnai beis din be tochdei dibur? It was established by the same beis din at the same time. So the Gemara questions this position. How do you know that this tnai beis din was established at the same time? Dilma betray beis din ha'itkun. Maybe they were established in two different beis dins. Meaning that these tnai ktubah that were established by Beis Din were established at different times. There were different rights granted to the woman or to the female children. They were granted at different times. If that's the case, they should have no effect on one on the other, because they're not Tochadei Dibor. They're not Tochadei Dibor, then Matana and Yerusha are totally separate. They're separate gifts, separate exchanges or transactions. And just because it says Matana in one doesn't mean that it influences or governs the other one that says Yerusha. So when it says, Losakadatcha, you can't say that they were established in two separate batei dinim. Why? Diktani Resha. It says in the Resha about this Mishnah, Zu Midrash Darash Rabbi Elazar ben Azari Lefnei Chachamim Bekeren Biavna. This is a drash, Abanim Yershu Vabanot Yizonu. The boys inherit, and the girls get their food from the estate, they get supported out of the estate. Ma Habanim Ene Yoshim El Lachar Mitat Aviim. Just like the rights of the sons only are granted once their father passes away, so too the girls or the daughters only are granted their rights after the death of their father, which means that there is no obligation on the father to support his children while he's still alive. Then we know from the Gemara in Ketubot, there they had the Tekanat Usha about supporting children, but there is no obligation on the father to support his children while he's alive. This Tanai Beis Din only applies, or only goes into effect, after the death of the father. When the father passes away, then his daughters are entitled to support or mizonot from the estate. So how do we know that? How do we know that his obligation to support his daughters only begins once he passes away? Because we are maikish. We draw a parallel between the gift to the sons to the gift of the daughters. Just like the gift of the sons only happens after the death of the father. How do we know that? Because it says Yartun. It says Yartun in their Lashon, which means to inherit. Inheritance only happens at the death of the father. So too by the daughters. That only happens when? After the death of the father. The fact that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is willing to draw some sort of parallel or connection between the two institutions of Beis Din, that means that he sees them as being instituted as a single time or in one entity. One Beis Din instituted them, and therefore, whatever applies to one of the institutions applies to the other institution. So just like they establish by the sons only after the death of the father, so too by the daughters, they only establish it after the death of the father. So, Iyamart Bishlama, if you say, B'chab Beit Dino Yitkuna, this was only established in one Beis Din, Hanu De'afina and Takana Mi Takana. Then you can learn from one Takana to another Takana. It's not like the Torah, which is a single body, and therefore you can learn Hekesh, so you can learn information from one part of the Torah to another. every Tachanat Beis Din, if it was done by a separate Beis Din, that would be a separate unit, entity, halacha, and you couldn't learn from one to the other. So the only way you could learn from one to the other is to establish that they were arranged or established at the same time in one Beis Din. So, if you say it was in two different Beis Dins, how could you learn from one Takana to the next? It says, Mimai, how do you know that? So according to this, maybe it was already established by two Beis, in two Bati Dinim. They were established in two different Bati Dinim. The Beis Din of Batra, Tikun, Kebeis Din of Kamel. No, the two takanot were totally separate. They were established in two separate batei dinim. What about this position of Rabbi Zera ben Zayi, who says, just like the takana for the benin dechrin, for the boys, getting the mother's ketubah was only after the death of the father, so too, by the daughters, it's their rights to mizonot from the estate only happened after the father's death. Why would you say that? They're established in two different places. Maybe they have to two different dinim. The answer to that is, Elazar ben Azariah is saying that it has to be this way. Why? Because otherwise you will have two institutions by Beis Din or two takanot established by Beis Din that have worked differently. One works after the father's death and one works during the lifetime of the father. So now in the ketubah you have different pieces of the ketubah that enter at different moments of time. And that would make it look funny. It would look strange that you have two Tanai Beis Din, right, or Tunaye Beit Din, that are found in the ketubah, but they work at different times. One's after the death of the father, one's before the death of the father. So since it would look strange, that's what Blazer says. It must be that the second Beit Din, when they established the rights of the daughters to get mizonot, they must have patterned it after the first Beit Din in order to make it consistent within the ketubah. Not that it was established by one Beis Din, but established by two Bati Dinim. Nevertheless, they did it in a manner that would make it that the document of Ketubah is consistent throughout and is easy to understand and would not confuse people as to when it's triggered. So now, what's the conclusion of the Gemara? What's the conclusion of the Gemara? What Rav asked one question. Does Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha apply by a Bari? So the answer to that question we tried to establish was from this question of Rabbi Natan to Rabbi. Then we said, maybe that's not the case. Why? Because it's all Tanai Beis Din. It's all an unusual case here. Then Abai says, no. Even though it's an unusual case, it's still, he used the Lashon Yartun. That's indicative that he means that he wants to be like Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha. Then Abai himself rejects that and says that can't be the case. Why? Because we have another principle that's being used here, that we have Yerusha Matana in one document, then Matana always governs. So the use of Yartun over here will not mean really Yerusha, because it'll be governed by Matana, it'll be like a Matana. Well, if that's the case, so then Abai says, wait a minute, the question on Abai is, maybe that's not true. How could you say that it's governed by one Matana Yerusha, because that means that it was established in one Beis Din. Who says it was established in one Beis Din? Maybe it was established in two Batei Dinim. If it's established in two Batei Dinim, then it doesn't prove anything because Matana will not govern Yerusha, and then Yartun would be a real statement. If Yartun's a real statement, now we're back to the beginning, which means that Yartun was put intentionally here. If it was put intentionally here, it sounds like it's like Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha. So what's the question? The answer to this will be, it depends if it was established in one Beis Din or two Batei Dinim. One Beis Din or two Batei Dinim will determine. That means it's a safek. We don't know. And that's exactly what Tosfos concludes over here. And the Tav of Tosfos says, Perish Shesfeka Havi. It's a safek. So we don't know what the din is over here. Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha by a, when it comes to a Bari, we won't know. The Rashbam, on the other hand, says no. The Rashbam says the Gemara already concluded that by Bari it works. That was long ago. The Gemara, when it first said that it was Tanai Beit Din, already over there, it established that it was a, the Gemara established before, the question of Rabbi Natan to Rabbi, by Bari, Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha applies. This whole extension of the Gemara in Abaye is just about Abaye. Abaye is saying that the word Yartun itself proves to you something, and then the Gemara goes to undermine it. But that's all after the fact. It's the Gemara already concluded, Bari, it works, Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha, now we're just on to other things. So he says, that's if the Rashbam says over here, Miu Baye de Hocha Yifshita Miu Milte de Rabbi Natan. It was already concluded from Minata, can depreciate that I explained above. To Afa Gav the Rebbe to Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha severely, even though Rebbe himself holds like Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha, and that's why he wrote the word Yartun. Nevertheless, Rabbi Natan's criticism of Rabbi is still use the lashon Yizbun, so it'll be Diriakol even according to the Chachamim. The fact that he didn't do that indicates that he must hold like Rabbi Yochanan ben Bruka. And that still stands. Even in the conclusion, that stands. And therefore, the halacha is like, the halacha is like the, what we established before, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Bruka even applies to a bari. The Ri, and Tosos agrees with this. He says, the Ri, Nira, the Bari, Nami, Amar. That he said it by Bari as well. So the Ri and the Rashbam here say that the Gemara is conclusive to a Rava's question of whether it applies to a Bari, and the answer is yes. Tosos himself says, no, it's a Safek. It's a Safek, and if it's a Safek, right, we have no conclusion over here. And that's the way the Shulchan Aruch paskens. The Shulchan Aruch paskens that it's a Safek over here. That's really a Safek, we don't know. The Gemara is inconclusive, and if it's inconclusive, we don't know if Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka would apply by a Bari, and therefore, it won't work. Because if you have a Safek, by Safek, it's a Motzi Mechaber Alav Araya, you can't bring a proof here. The only question might be, if Tafas Mafkinen Le, if he goes in and grabs it and says, I'm sure the Loch is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka here, can I take it? And do I have to give it back? So that happens in Machlok Zachronim, whether Tafas Mafkinen Le or not. Whether once he grabs it, does he have to return it or not? I'll point out that there's this on the side here. There's this Perish Rashbam Ikari, which is the what seems to be the original Rashbam or the real Rashbam, because Tosos himself questions the position of the Rashbam, and it's not found in our Rashbam on the Daf, but that's found in this Rashbam Ikari. But they had this, or what exactly is Rashbam Ikari? He explains the Gemara a little differently. He explains it in a very strange way that Abaye is trying to say that it's a not davar shabbat yodam. Abaye is saying the fact that you use a lashon yartun of Yerusha means that you're basically saying that the gift is only granted at the time of death, and at that point the children are already in the world. So it's not, his answer is not that about what we were saying about the Lashon that was used in the Mishnah, but rather the answer to the question is, how do you grant a gift to someone who doesn't exist in the world? And the answer is that he uses the Lashon Yatun, which really kind of brings them into the world, because they're at that point in time they will be in the world in the future, and therefore it's not a gift. So that's the question, then the Gemara rejects it. I'm just saying that Tosfos jumps on this. I mean, where do you ever find such a thing? Just because in the future they will be in the world, that doesn't help you out in terms of a person that doesn't exist today. So that is the Rashbam Ikari, and therefore he has a different flow in the Gemara, although his conclusion in the Gemara is similar to Tosos, which is that this is a fake in the end. In the end, he doesn't know which way to go, and that's again the Shulchan Aruch passing that way. Right now, Amar Rav Yehuda Mishmol, Akotev kol nechasav v'ishto, lo asa ela pitropa. Person who writes all of his property to his wife, grants all of his property to his wife, he does not really give his property to his wife, but rather he's making her the caretaker or the executor of the estate. So now, by the way, we learned this together in Gittin. The Gemara there in Gittin says that this is milta below taima. There are three things that the Chachamim established that are milta below taima, items that have no reason. Over there, we were discussing mamad shloshtam, which was the ability to pass a loan to another party or grant something to another party. Mamad shloshtam, if you have the two-part, the buyer, the seller, and another party there, that allows you to create some sort of tokef akinyan, milta below taima. These are items that have no reason. Now Rashi over there in Gittin says milta below taima means that these are like halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. There's no reason, nothing. They're just like halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. They work, and that's it. Nothing to think about. Tosfot, the Rosh, others say that no. Milta below taima means that, right, they're not necessarily what you would have established the most, they're not necessarily what should have happened in these cases, but there is some reason for them. Meaning that if Mamad Shloshtam is a business reason, we want to allow people in the shuk to transact without having to make kinyanim and bring the item physically there or pay the money right away. So we created a kinyan of Mamad Shloshtam to ease commerce. So there is a reason, but the reason is, meaning that multiple time, it means that there's no halachic function that allows it to happen. Halachically, it shouldn't happen. Chachamim established this to help out with commerce. So same thing over here by the woman. This is Rashi called multiple time. It makes no sense, and that's it. It's halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. The Tosfos says no. It makes sense. It makes sense. Why? Because why would a husband want to grant all of his property to his wife? Now there's no way he'd want to grant all his property to his wife and disinherit his children. That doesn't make sense. That's not true in modern day, but in their day it would not. That was not mukubal to give all your property to your wife and none of your children. So why would it be the only reason that he wrote the gift to his wife is in order that she be the executor of the estate and the children have to give her kavod? That the children will have to relate to their mother or possibly their stepmother in a manner which grants her kavod. Because if not... All right, that's another possibility, right? There are other Rishonim that say here they're minors. If they're minors over here, maybe that's what does it. But that way, we establish that the woman has control, not because she owns it, But it's Gevurah Kavod. So it is a Taima. The Rechamim had a reason to do this, because they're saying, we're looking at Umdana Dat. We're looking at what was the man thinking when he did this. He really couldn't have been thinking that he's going to give all his property to his wife. Nobody does that. So must have been thinking is, she wants him to be the executor of the estate. Right now, next statement. Pshita. It's clear that if he grants all of his property to his eldest son, again, he's not giving him the property. He's making him the executor of the estate. And again, for the same reason, why? Because we want him to be granted kavod from the other children. The other children are chayav in the kavod of the oldest child. And therefore, the father generates this or engenders that by making him the executor of the estate. So everyone's dependent on him. But now that he's granting all of his property to his eldest son, the problem with this is, well, we just saw before that Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha says you can redistribute Yerusha any way you want. So why over here? Well, all of a sudden we're saying that you can't. He's saying that if you give a grant all your property to your eldest son, it's not a, right? It's not a Yerusha, it's a, he becomes executor of the estate. And we're going to see it even more now. B'no Ketan Mai, what's the story with the younger child? Even a baby in the crib. Right? We assume that it's not a gift to this individual, but rather he is the executor of the estate. So again, the question becomes even more so. What do you mean that he is the executor of the estate over here? Why can't he redistribute his Rusha any way he wants? Why all of a sudden over here do we say that you're an executor and you don't get the gift? So there are different answers. One possible answer over here is that it's only in a case where the other children are minors, right? Or where there is, like for instance, with the oldest child, where the other kids are minors, it's clear that the gift to the oldest child is not to say you get it and not the other children, but rather to make him the executor to take care of the other kids. Now that's harder to say by a Bnei Katan, but it could be possible that he's just trying to, right, organize how it's going to be taken care of from this point forward. The Rishbam, on the other hand, this is back on Kuf Lamed, makes a distinction over here, and he makes a distinction about how it's granted. He says here that when it comes to a child, if you write all his property, he only makes him a apitropos. That's only if he does it belashon matana, if he gives it as a gift. If he gives all of his property to his eldest son, then he's an executor and not the what recipient of all of that property. On the other hand, if he writes Lashon Yerusha, the oldest son gets it. Why? That's Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha. So the Rashbam differentiates between how it's granted. If it's granted in Lashon Yerusha, that's Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha, you get everything. If it's granted by Lashon Matana as a gift, then we look at this Umdana Dadat. Why would he gift all of his property to his oldest son? Must be, he wants his oldest son to be the executor of the estate. So that's how the Rashbam differentiates between what's going on in this Gemara right here and what we said before in Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha. Right now, the Gemara says, Pshita bno v'acher, so if you read the Gemara simply over here, it would sound like you have two people that are granted over here, his son and someone else. They're both granted it, and it comes down to the grant was granted half to his son and half to a third party. Then it's clear that the third party is granted as a gift, and he keeps it and walks away. And the son's gift is only to make him an executor. That's the way I would have read the Gemara, but that's not. The Rishbam challenges that and says no, that the way to read this Gemara is, O b'no, o acher. It's a totally separate transaction, totally different grants. If a father grants to his son, it's clear, like we said before, that it makes him the executor of the estate. Number two is, if he grants to a third party, then it's clear he's making it a matana. He has no reason to grant to a third party to make them the executor of the estate, and if he is trying to make them the executor, he should have said it explicitly. Why? Because what is his reason to make the children or anybody else go to this individual to get their monies or to get their Yerusha, unless he wants them to grant him kavod? Why would he want some third party to get kavod? In the other situations, we understood by his wife or by his eldest son, we understand why he wants them to grant kavod to him. So then we can explain that they're executors. By a third party, unless he explicitly states this person is an executor, he has no reason to force the children to give kavod to this third party. So that's the way the Rashbam reads it. He reads it as being two separate cases, and that's established. He goes, and even if you want to say it's one case, he says, if you want to say it, he says it's bedochak, he says, then it has to be a case where that each one of them got chatzi nechasim, and that the one brother is the executor over his half of the property for all the other brothers, and the other half of the property goes to this person as a gift. All right, now, the Gemara continues. Ishto arusav, ishto grusha. A person grants a gift to his wife that he's engaged to, only has kiddushin with, has not married fully yet, does not have nisuin, or to his divorced wife that he divorced, Those are clearly matana. Those are clearly gifts. Again, because there's no reason to believe that he wants anyone to give kavod to his ex-wife. Why does he want to give her kavod? And number two is, why is he's not gatzpa? He hasn't married this woman. He's only engaged to her. Why would he want the children to have to give kavod to a woman he's only engaged to, not married to yet? So because of that, it's for certain if he grants them property that he's granting as a gift and not to make them executors over here. So Yibailahu, bat etzel banim. What happens if he grants the gift to a daughter by brothers? Visha etzel achim, or a woman, his wife, by his brothers. What's the din? Visha etzel bnei baal mahu. And also, what's the din by a woman by his children, bnei baal, meaning his children, but not from this wife, stepchildren. So again, what happens if he grants the property to a daughter? And there are boys here, there are male children. A woman, he grants it to his wife when his brothers are alive. Or he grants it to his wife where there are other children, other male children here, but then not her children. So Amar Ravina Mishmei Derovo. Ravina says, in the name of Kulu Lokana. In all of them, she's not the recipient of the gift, meaning that she is the executor of the estate in these cases. Lavar Mishto Arusa Vishto Grusha. Except for the case of Ishto Arusa and Ishto Grusha, that's clear there that he's granted. There are five women here. Let's look, there are five women. Ishto Arusa, right, his woman that he's engaged to. Ishto Grusha, his divorced wife. There's Bat Itzel Banim, the daughter, right? Then there's his wife with his brothers. And then there's his wife with his male children that are her stepchildren. Five women over here. So that's what Ravina says. In all of them, the woman is always the executor of the estate, except for two of those women, which are the divorcee and the engaged woman. It's clear that he's not making the executor, he's giving them a gift and bye-bye. Because what does he need them around for? What does he want people to grant them kavod?
So that he's better than the others, even
right.
The father relationship.
Exactly. It's interesting, right. The farther away you are from the relationship, the better you actually get the gift and you're not an executor because exactly that. We can't say there's an umdanadas that he's really trying to make them an executor, grant them kavod of some sort. There, it's clear that he's just gifting them and wants them out of the picture. So that's what we do. We give them matana and go out of the picture. Now, Rav Avira Mishmei de Rav Amar, who says in the name of Rav Abakulu Kami, in all of them, the woman gets the matana, the var, except, so what are the exceptions here? The var mei aisha itzel achin, v'isha itzel bnei abal. Except for the cases of a woman with his brothers and the woman with the stepchildren. Since in those cases, he wants his brothers-in-law, right, her brothers-in-law, to grant her kavod. Or, in the case by the stepchildren, he wants them, they have some sort of kavod, because ishida av your chayvin kavod, since he wants to grant them kavod. In those two cases, we say she's an executor. So now it will turn out, when it comes to these five women, right, there's only one difference between these two positions. Everybody agrees by arusa and grusha, it's a matana. Everybody agrees by a woman by the brothers and a woman by the stepchildren, one by her brothers-in-law, and a woman by the stepchildren, that it's not a gift, it's an executor. What's the only one difference? There's only one pivotal one between them, is that the bat etzel habanim, the daughter by the brothers. By the daughter by the brothers, that's the only case. So according to this, the daughter by the brothers, according to Rav Avira, she will be koneh, and she'll get it as a matana. And according to Ravina, she will not get it as a matana, she will be an executor. So the only difference between them will be this one case of bat itzel habanim. That will be the only nafka minah between them, whether it's granted as a gift or she's an executor. There will be one other, the Rabbeinu Gershom has a different girsa over here. In his girsa, he has levar misha itzel banim. That he is not including a woman by the sons. And same thing with isha by bnei abal. So he leaves out, in his last line here in the Gemara, it doesn't say levar misha itzel achin. It says levar misha itzel abanim, bisha itzel bnei abal. So therefore, for him, there'll be two nafkaminot. The two nafkaminot between them will be the case of the daughter by the sons, as well as the wife by the brothers. So by him, wife by her brothers will also be subject to the machlokes between Ravina and Rav Avira. Whereas according to the Rishbam, and the way the girsa that we have in our Gemara, the only difference between Ravina and Rav Avira will be by a daughter by sons. Is she an executor, or is she a recipient of the gift? Okay, we'll stop over here.